We left off last week. We were giving some examples of ribbis derabanan. We mentioned at the very end of the shiur that the common denominator between all of those ribbis, both ribbis deraisa and ribbis derabanan, is that obviously the lova is giving something additional to the malva. If the lova gives exactly what he got from the malva, so then that's not ribbis, that's a normal loan. That's perfectly okay. But there's one exception even to that. Sometimes you can have a situation where I lend you something and you give me back that exact, well, not literally that item. If you make that item, that's not called a loan. It's called a borrowing, like a borrowing a car. But I give you X amount of something and you return to me X amount of something without adding anything. You didn't add anything. You didn't add any favors. You didn't let me live in your house. And it's still going to be a potential problem of ribbis derabanan. And that introduces us to sugya of what's called sa'a b'sa'a. So the Mishnah, the end of the fifth paragraph of Maseches B'Metzia, Nezu Neshech, tells us that one is not permitted to lend X amount of fruit, X amount of grain. A saw is just a measurement. Doesn't really matter how much it is for our purposes. You're not permitted to lend a X amount of saw of grain in return for a saw of grain. So the question is, why not? What could possibly be the problem? I'm giving you a saw and you're giving me back a saw. If I lend you a saw and you give me back two saws, that's ribbis deraisa. Ribbis deraisa, of course, doesn't only apply to money. It applies to items as well. If it's a type of an item that the exact object itself is not going to be returned. So what could possibly be wrong about lending you a saw and receiving a saw in return? So the Gemara explains the problem is as follows, that the price may go up. So if the price goes up on the saw, if we worded our deal as I'm lending you a saw and you can return me a saw, well, right now the saw may be worth $100. And in 2 weeks from now when you return me the saw is worth $120. So it turns out you give me ribbis in effect. Now, this is clearly not going to be ribbis deraisa because it's not ketsutza by any stretch of the imagination. Ketsutza, as we spoke about in the first year, means that we set an amount of ribbis at the beginning, either at the beginning or the time of the payment. Here there's nothing set. Here the ketsutza is behet there. Here I'm telling you a saw and you're returning me a saw, but that saw that you're giving me, there's an outside chance that saw may be worth more, and therefore it's prohibited with the Rabbanon to start off such a deal, even if it turns out that it never goes up. Even if at the end of the day the price goes down, the price stays the same, we still violated Nisa the Rabbanon called Ribbis Saw of the Saw, it's a Gezerah of the Ribbis Deraisa.
How does that differ? And if my neighbor comes over to me and wants to borrow a cup of sugar,
okay, we're going to talk about that.
And a month later, and you could keep it for a month. A month later, she returns the cup of sugar. But the sugar futures...
Who said that that's mutter? We'll get there. Okay, we'll see. We'll see.
Why sell the stuff
as
so? Let's say that money is the
value. Oh, okay, we're going to get the money in a little while, okay? So comes the Mishnah, and then the Gemara elaborates upon this and says that this Isser of Saw V'Saw is clearly not a Ribbis Deraisa. It sounds like it's even a little bit of a watered down Isser Ribbis Derabanan, because it's only a suffix that it's ever going to turn into a Ribbis in the first place. But nevertheless, Chazal prohibited under all circumstances, but not really under all circumstances. Chazal gave a certain kulas within the realm of Saw V'Saw. And the reason for many of these kulas is, since the whole thing is on a bit Derabanan anyway, if we can somehow make it that it doesn't really look like Ribbis, that Lefira Oseinenu, it doesn't really appear to be Ribbis, so then we're not going to be concerned. What do we do? How do we transform this? That saw b'saw, lending a pound of this for a pound in return, shouldn't look like ribbis. So the Mishnah gives us a few examples. So one example is if the lova has some of the grain in his house. So let's say like this. I come to you and I say, I want to borrow a saw of grain, X amount of grain. I'm going to return you a saw of grain next week. It happens to be that I have grain. I have grain. It's just, it's not so easy for me to get it. It's not accessible right now. But I have the grain right now. So comes the Mishnah and says, that's okay. As long as I have an amount of grain, I'm asking you for X amount, and I have that amount in my somewhere in my field, somewhere in my backyard, somewhere 20 miles from now, from here, so that's okay. Why? Then we no longer view this really as ke'ilu, I'm borrowing grain, and I'm giving you grain in return. Rather, we view it as, I'm flipping grain with you, I'm switching grain with you, chalipin, means you are giving me the grain, and now whatever grain I have really belongs to you at this point. So if it belongs to you, and then it goes up in value, so your grain went up in value, that's not a halavah. Now again, the whole thing is only a problem with the Rabbanan anyway. Midaraisa, there's no problem with ribbis in this type of a situation. But to avoid this, it's a Rabbanan. So Chazal gave us a kula. It's what's called Haveni Atche Emsa Mafteach. That's the case that the Mishnah says. Lend me a saw until I find the key to my storehouse to get my saw of grain. So that's okay. That doesn't look so bad as ribbis. That looks more like a trade. I'm giving you my grain, and then the grain is going up in value when it's in your possession. That's not a violation of saw b'saw. That's the first example that the Gemara gives. Then the Gemara gives even a cooler within this, that what would the halacha be as follows. Let's say I come to you and I say, I want a saw of grain, I'd like to borrow a saw of grain from you, and I happen not to have a sov grain in my backyard somewhere. I have a half of a sov grain. I have a quarter. I have a hundredth of a sov grain. So the Gemara says that's also okay. Even though I don't really have the right amount that I'm borrowing from you, it doesn't matter. What's a half a sov, a whole sov? The whole thing is on a midrash rabbanan anyway. So we make believe it's considered to be belong to you. Even if you don't have the full amount, that's also okay. Then the Rishonim add on to this and say, you can circumvent the whole prohibition of sov b'sov in a very simple way. I come to you and I say, I'd like to borrow a sov of grain from you. I happen not to have any grain whatsoever. So before I actually borrow the sov of grain from you, what you should do is you should be machmit to me a little bit of your grain. So you'll be machmit to me a hundredth of a sov of grain. You give it to me as a present. And now I own a little bit of grain. So once I own a little bit of grain, so now we can play the game. So now sov b'sov doesn't apply anymore because as long as I have a little bit, so I can be low for kama sovs on the smallest amount of grain that I have. So there are some simple, easy ways to get around this problem of sov b'sov. Again, the idea being the whole thing is omer d'rabbanan anyway. The whole thing is that it shouldn't come to confuse people. This may lead to ribbis. So if people worded and couch these transactions in such a way that it appears not to be so much of a loan, but rather a trading of one grain for another grain, so then it doesn't lead people to the conclusion that it looks like sov b'sov, and therefore it would be permissible. So the basic heter is yesh lo, he has, and you can even water it down. Has doesn't mean the full amount, and has doesn't mean he really has. It means as long as you give him a little bit, that's also considered to be as of the lo has some, and then the problem of sov b'sov is avoided. There are other ways of avoiding the problem of sov b'sov, at least the way most Rishonim assume, that if you have what's called Yotzah HaShar, well, then hopefully we'll talk about this a little bit later on, maybe today, and in other contexts as well, where there's already a set price for grain on the market. So the whole fear is that the price is going to go up. The price fluctuates, so it may turn out that I lent you X amount of grain, and now you're going to return me X amount next week, it's going to be worth $20 more. But if there's a set market value to grain, the grain hasn't been fluctuating so bad. For the last 6 months, it's been set at $100 per, I have no idea how much a saw is, and I have no idea what the price of grain is, but I'll make you a number. $100 per saw of grain, if that's the basic market price, so then the halacha is permissible. Then we're not so concerned anymore that it looks like a ribbis of saw of the saw, and therefore the chamin permitted it as well. So again, on the books, there is this issa derabbanan called saw b'saw out there, but there are a few different terim, either yeshlo, with the water down yeshlo, or if it's yotz hashar, all of those cases would be permissible, would not be a violation, even with the rabbanan of ribbis saw b'saw. Yeah. Right. The third. No, you're not returning $110. You're returning $100. So you're returning the amount that you borrowed. You're not allowed. That amount may end up being costing more money. Right. You know what I mean? Right.
But what if you're returning money instead of?
If you decide that you don't want to return,
you borrowed eggs, and you're returning money instead of eggs.
I think that's a problem. I think unless you're saying that I'm buying it. Instead, I'm saying that I'm buying it. That's the Gemara. The Gemara has a machlekes about that, about the mali hein mali demei. And whenever it's mutter to make these kinds of deals that I'm allowed to get I'm allowed to give you back X amount of fruit, and now that fruit lemaisa goes up. Can I give you the value of that? That's machlekes in the Gemara. I think we passed even that's mutter. I think so. I have to double check. Right, I think that's mutter also. I have to double check. Next time, hold off with your eggs. Yeah.
Can you buy futures?
We're going to talk about the buying futures. That's leading into the next topic. Okay?
So how does my neighbor...
I didn't get to the sugar yet. I'm getting there. I'm still getting there. I'm still getting to the sugar. So there is a cryptic statement in the Mishnah, in the very end of Ezu Neshech, where the Mishnah speaks about women borrowing loaves of bread from one another. And the Mishnah seems to say that that's not considered to be a problem of Sov B'Sov. So the Rishonim have bothered. So why not? Why isn't that a classic application of what's the difference when I'm buying grain, when I'm buying eggs, when I'm buying loaves of bread? What's the difference? So many Rishonim say the difference is as follows. If it's considered to be a Dovah Mu'at, if it's considered to be such a small amount of a quote-unquote loan that neighbors usually do, it's a daily kind of an occurrence. I come and I need a little bit of sugar, I need an egg, you give me another egg, I need this and that. If you have these very, very small types of quote-unquote transactions, so then the whole prohibition of Sov B'Sov was never instituted. Because the whole list of Sov B'Sov is only B'chei Gavda, where it really looks like ribbis. The whole thing everything is omer derabbanan anyway. It's a gezeira of the ribbis deraisa. So if, like in a business type of a setting, so I ask you, can I borrow a saw of grain? That's a significant amount of grain. I wouldn't just stop popping to my neighbor and ask them for a little bit of grain. I would start up a contract with you. I want to borrow X amount of grain. So b'chi gavda the chamin prohibited saw the saw. It's such an insignificant amount that neighbors would knock on each other's door and borrow things from one another. So the whole list of saw b'saw doesn't apply. So the answer to Rav Brukhamer's question is that's probably the answer. That if I come and I say to you, can I please borrow a little bit of sugar, and then I return to you the same amount of sugar, that's not considered to be a problem. The sugar went up in price, that's okay. That was never included in the Yisad Rabbanon of Sob Besaw. What if I actually give you back more sugar? So that's already a different story. There, it's not a question of fluctuation in price. The Elam Mice, I'm giving you back more. So there, it would probably depend on the following. If I say to you, I'd like to borrow a cup of sugar, and don't worry, when I come back next week, I'm going to give you back 2 cups of sugar. That's ribbis deraisa. There's no question about that. If I borrow a cup of sugar from you, and we weren't kotzeitz, we didn't declare that I'm giving you back two cups of sugar, but out of the goodness of my own heart, I come back next week and I return you that extra cup of sugar. That would not be ribbis deraisa. That would be ribbis derabonin. That's like any other ribbis that wasn't katsutsa bishas the halva bishas epiro. But if I say to you, listen, I'd like to borrow a cup of sugar from you, and when I return it, so I'm not so medactic, I don't sit and measure it every, it's not measuring matzah for the seder, I don't measure every little drop of sugar, and it turns out, klap ishmaya, that I gave you back three extra granules of sugar, so that's not ribbis deraisa, it's not ribbis derabbanan. So the poskim explained that when you have these very, very insignificant amounts, this is something like we spoke about last week, about returning, it's like the money case, right, because I gave you back, you keep the change, keep the extra 2 pennies or something, so it wasn't being done b'toras as chayvus to return it. We didn't make a deal that I'm going to return the extra sugar or the extra money. And I'm not doing it out of the goodness of my heart. I'm doing it because it's not shayach to be medactic exactly how much sugar I took from you. So if I end up giving you a drop more, that would be okay. So if there's a change of price in the sugar, it doesn't bother us at all because this is not so b'saw because it's such a small, insignificant amount. But even if, in terms of the volume of the sugar, I give you back a little bit more. Again, if it's an infinitesimal amount, so then we're not concerned with that either. So the application of
Right,
you don't have to be so happy with that. Right. That's the same as the sugar. Right? The application of this klal of Sob Besaw, many people never learned Ezu Neshech, but who did learn Hazov. In the yeshivas, they very rarely learn Ezu Neshech, but in the yeshivas, they do learn Hazov. So a lot of yeshiva bachim, they only heard of Sob Besaw because of the sugya that appears at the beginning of the fourth perek above Metziah, and that is a very real application, and that's as follows. The Gemara, in the very beginning of the fourth perek above Metziah, tells us that there's a basic premise in halacha, and again, you know, whether this is true in the modern day economic system or not is a different story, but the basic premise of halacha is that the value of money doesn't change. That whatever is considered to be money, so the money remains the same. There are changes. We know there are changes in prices. So the answer is it's not the money that changes, it's the object that changes. That's the soda yisodus of the economy of Chazal. That's the way the Torah envisions the relationship between money and goods, is that whatever is halachically considered to be the money, the currency of that society, is considered to be a davar shel kayama. How do you define what's considered to be the currency and what's considered to be goods? So for us, it's pretty simple. We know what currency is. You live in America, so a dollar is the currency. You live in Israel, shekelim is the currency. Wherever you live, that's whatever the government says, that's considered to be the currency. But in the days of Chazal, it wasn't as simple as that because you had a lot of trading in metals. And it sometimes wasn't clear what's the currency and what's the commodity. So that's the very first Mishnah in Perek Hazov. Hazov, Koines HaKesef. So the Mishnah is discussing not even about ribis, the Mishnah is discussing about kinyonim. The halacha is that if I want to sell you metaltlets, I want to sell you a bag of potatoes, so the way for that kinyon to be chal is for you to make a kinyon on the potatoes. You have to either pick up the potatoes, a mashicha, agbo, etc., on the bag of potatoes itself. The fact that you give me cash, that's only ma'os, and ma'os are not konos. That's a shali, deraisa, derabana, whatever it is. The bottom line is that the way to be kona metaltlan, the way to be kona movable objects, is dafka through giving of cash, dafka through kesef, I'm sorry, dafka through mashicha, and dafka not through kesef. Not through ma'os. So the first mishnah, the fourth parak of Metziah raises the question: if I'm trading with you gold for silver, so what's the goods and what's the cash? What's the money and what is the commodity? So if you hold that the gold is the of the goods, so then the way to be kona the gold is to make a kinyan on the gold, to pick up the gold. If you hold that the kesef is the other goods, then the way to be kona it is to make a kinyan on the kesef. If you do a kinyan on the wrong things, then you didn't pick up the goods, you just gave cash, and that's not binding in halacha. That's the opening sugya in the fourth parak of Metziah. My father told me when he was a little boy he went to Chaim Berlin, it's elementary school. So he said they were learning Perek Hazov one year. So he says he remembers the Rebbe got up on the first day, and that's how he used to learn. Hazov, Kodesh HaKesef. He says, gold, koiv, zilber. So all the boys said, gold, koiv, zilber. My father said he remembers they didn't know what the gold was, what the silver was, what the koiv was the entire year. They were learning about gold buying silver buying gold buying. No one explained to me. I had no clue what the whole year. That's how they learned the Perek Hazov. Anyway, so. Does that make sense? It could happen that way. In the middle of that discussion about the gold and the silver, about the gold and the silver, what's considered to be the kesef, what's considered to be the goods, so the Gemara says that Shaila is going to have a potential nafkamina like Abbe Saw Basaw as well. So what's the nafkamina like Abbe Saw Basaw? So the halacha is, I'm allowed to lend you $100 in order to get in return $100. If that's the cash, if that's the currency, so that's perfectly okay. 100 for 100 is all right. But if it's not the currency, if it's goods, so then the goods may go up in value. So as we said before, the premise of Chazal's economy is that the goods fluctuate, the cash doesn't fluctuate. So whatever is halakhically labeled as the cash, so that's okay. You can give 100 for 100. But if it's halakhically the goods, then you can't give 100 for 100, because that's the chashash der rabban of sob besaw. So how do you know when you're dealing with gold and silver, which is which? So the Gemara quotes a machlekes atanaim about this. As to when you have this type of a setup, a zov versus kesef versus zov, what's the cash and what's the commodities, both nafkamina for kinyonim, as well as for the din, the rabban of sob besaw. What's the issue? So the Gemara explains that on the one hand, Zov is more choshev. So it leads us to believe that the more choshev, the more insignificant, the more expensive of the two, is considered to be the cash, and everything else is considered to be the goods. On the other hand, the Gemara says, maybe kesef is considered to, maybe the silver is considered to be the cash, the currency, because the silver is chorev tvei, that it's easier to deal with silver, that it's more accessible silver rather than the gold. So maybe the silver, which is easier to deal with, maybe that's considered to be the cash system, maybe that's considered to be the currency, and the gold is considered to be the good. So the Gemara svar is back and forth. So the Gemara says it was machlekes atanoim between Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. The Gemara says that he changed his mind later in life. In his younger years, he thought one way, and then when he got older, he changed his mind. That's why there's a braisa in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi saying one thing, and there's the Mishnah saying something else. So a whole complicated sugya in the beginning of Perek Hazov. So the Maisa, most of us don't, I mean, maybe some of us do, I don't, most of us don't sell gold and silver back and forth, so we don't have, most of us aren't lending gold and silver back and forth. So for us, how do we define what's considered to be cash and what's not? So the post came out the following lashon. The post came saying, this was all true, this whole machlokes was all true, this man chazal, when it really wasn't clear what the currency is. But if you live in a society where everybody knows what the currency is dollars, because we live in America, so that's the currency. Everything besides dollars is by definition considered to be not currency. So let's say Bisman Azev, a person would want to lend gold to somebody. So gold is not a currency. I don't know, can you walk into a store and buy something with gold? No, you can't do that anymore. What? That's just, I knew there was a reason why you came to the shed today. Madach, in the old days when there was a gold standard, now every dollar was backed up in Fort Knox with gold. Okay, Bisman Azev, even that doesn't exist. So Bistama Bisman Azev, it's not legal tender. Gold is not legal tender, am I right? Am I right?
I think it was after back
to
the silver.
It was silver? It was back by silver?
Yeah.
Whatever. Okay. Whatever it is. Tachlis, the bottom line is you can go into a store and buy with dollar bills. You can't go into a store and buy with bars of gold. So therefore, Bisman Hazeh, it's obvious that dollars are considered to be the currency. Everything else is considered to be. The metal is considered to be the commodities, the goods. And therefore, they would be subject to the problems of so. So if I want to lend somebody, I'm going to lend you 100 bars of gold, and you're going to return me 100 different, if you return me the same gold, okay. But if you're going to return me different bars of gold, that would be a problem of so. So that's the cloud gold of Bisman Hazeh, that basically it's only cash itself that's considered to be the currency standard, and that's not subject to sob besaw. So you're allowed to lend $100 for $100, but you're not allowed to lend $100 sob of any other material, including precious metals.
What about between one currency
Oh, that's exactly what we're leading to. That's what we're going to. So the question becomes, that's all fine and dandy, assuming that you're in America and you're lending dollar bills, or you're in Eretz Yisrael and you're lending shkolim. What if you want to start crossing currencies? What if a person is in Eretz Yisrael and he wants to start lending dollar bills? Or a person's in America wants to start lending a yen? I don't know, whatever things he wants to do. So then the post can point out that's not considered to be currency. So if you have euros in New York City, that's not a currency. You can't walk into a store and pay with euros. Maybe they'll take euros, but they don't have to take euros. So apidin, the euros are not considered to be currency in America. So if they're not considered to be currency in America, if I'm sitting in America and I want to lend you 10 euros, you'll give me back next week 10 euros, that's a classic violation of sah b'sah, because maybe the price is quote-unquote going to fluctuate. So if the cash never fluctuates, currency, the dollar never changes, but in America, the euros change, or in America, the shkolim change.
So you just said two different things.
What did I say?
You said, one, is it legal tender, or does it fluctuate? Because let's say, for example, I'm in Israel.
Wait, hold on. Leave that show for a second, okay? We're going to get there in a second. So let's first talk about other kinds of countries where it's clear as day that the euro is not the currency in America. So since it's not the currency, therefore it's considered to be like goods. Since it's like goods, therefore it's a violation of sah b'sah, and that would be a problem. Unless you have some of the other coolers of sah b'sah. So we'll go back to some of the coolers that we spoke about in the past. So if the past 20 minutes ago. So if you have a little bit, let's say I want to lend you 10 euros in America, if you're going to give me back 10 euros next week, and you happen to have 1 euro in your pocket. So you have 1 euro in your pocket, that's mutter, because sah b'sah is mutter as long as yeshlo. And we said before, yeshlo doesn't mean only yeshlo. Yeshlo means even if you have the smallest amount, that would also be okay. Well, if you don't have 1 euro, so I'll be mocking you 1 euro. And now I'll be able to borrow from you, be able to buy the 10 euros. So whatever coolers we had by regular sah b'sah are going to kick in terms of these kinds of sah b'sah, these applications of sah b'sah as well. The question becomes, what if you have yatsa hashar? Is there such a concept of yatsa hashar? So we said before that when it comes to goods, so there is a concept of yatsa hashar. It means you go to the market and the potatoes are at the same $1.29. They've been that way for the last 6 months. That's the price. There's no major fluctuation. So that's considered to be yatsa hashar. So therefore it would be mutter. So would be permissible, even if the person doesn't have any potatoes right now in his hand. So what's the story with money? Can we say that's called yatsa hashar? So the poskim are very, very weary to apply the principle of yatsa hashar to money, to foreign currencies, because it always changes. So some poskim say, well, what if that morning there was a kriya shah? Like, you know, when you go, that's all, you see the big signs that say, okay, the dollars are this, and the yen is this, and the euros are this, I don't know. Is that called yatsa hashar, at least for that day? So the poskim are weary about that also. Is it really yatsa hashar? Everything changes so fast in terms of currencies, it's hard to apply the principle of yatsa hashar. So we may have a real problem. We may be really in a bind. I mean, it's not such a big bind. Most of us aren't lending euros to one another. But anyone who deals with foreign currencies would have a potential issue in terms of sah b'sah. The most common example, of course, for us is not the euros in Pathmark, but of course the most common example is dollars in Eretz Yisrael. So what would that halacha be? Am I permitted to lend somebody dollars in Eretz Yisrael to get paid back dollars? Is that the same amount of dollars? I'm not going to share. I'm going to lend you $100 in Eretz Yisrael. Are you going to pay me back next week $100 in Eretz Yisrael? Is that a violation of sah b'sah or not? So this was a big machlekes aposkim started many years ago about what's the status of dollars in Eretz Yisrael. Can we say that dollars in Eretz Yisrael is like a second currency? Can one argue that since it's so mekubal to buy things with dollars? So if you look in the earliest svarim, you know, 25-30 years ago, so you see the lashon that the many poskim had was that yes, that it's mutter, that you're allowed to use, you're allowed to lend money in Eretz, so you're allowed to lend dollars in Eretz Yisrael to receive dollars back, that you don't have to be concerned at all with any issues of sah b'sah, because it's mamish considered to be like a second currency, and haraya, it's a second currency. Forget it, some parts of Israel, it's the first currency. So the lashon that was given, the reason that was explained was that the way the shekel was, those who remember, I remember when I was in Kerbiavna, so one day to go on a bus to Yerushalayim was like 5 shkolim, the next day it was like 500 shkolim. So when you had those kinds of, when you had such crazy inflation, 300% inflation, so everyone was trying to get rid of their shkolim, everyone was trying to hold on to dollars, so 90% of the business deals were being, no one's doing business in shkolim. So at that point, in Ochinami, at that point those posts were probably correct, that the dollars were considered to be the at least not of the primary, but definitely an acceptable form of currency, and therefore sah b'sah wouldn't apply. The later poskim of the last couple of years have pointed out that since the Baruch Hashem, the Israeli economy is shaped up in terms of that hyperinflation, the Baruch Hashem doesn't exist anymore. So people really are not running after dollars. You try, you know, you try to go ask an Israeli whether they want to trade dollars for shkolim. They don't want your dollars. They'd rather have the shkolim. So people are not running to go do business in dollars anymore. So it's very hard to defend the fact that Bizman Azeh, that the dollars are considered to be a currency. It's not legal tender. You can't, I mean, there may be some stores that they'll still take it from you, but it's, they'll all take it from you.
No, I've never been in a store that
goes,
sorry, dollars, I won't pay
them. Okay.
I mean, they may not say,
look, listen, you can't. Okay, so Chana wants to argue that even Mizman Azeh, it's still considered to be. Okay, maybe, I don't know. But I would say like this, if you look in the postkin from 30 years ago, it was like double partial like that. The dollars are considered to be a currency in Eretz Israel, nothing to worry about. Today, the other postkin have questioned it. It's usually not that relevant, I'll tell you why. It's not as relevant as it sounds like. Because even Aniach, worst case scenario, it's Sobasaw. Good, so it's Sobasaw. But there are so many ways to get around Sobasaw. So one of the ways to get around Sobasaw is that if I have a little bit of that commodity, that it's not a problem with Sobasaw. So if I come to you in Eretz Israel and I say, listen, I want to borrow $100 from you, I'll pay you back $100 next week. As long as I have $1 in my pocket, that's okay. Now, I don't even have to have that $1 in my pocket. The lashon in the Gemara is that Achi Emsa Mafteach. Means even if I can't get to the dollar right now, but I could get to it at some point, I have access to the dollar somewhere, so that's okay. So the post can discuss how much access is access. If I have to, take me 20 years till I'm able to find that dollar that I have stashed away somewhere, maybe that's not called access. Whereas Bizman Hazeh, I have access to my dollars. My dollars are all sitting in my bank in America. What's a ticket? What, to hop onto a plane? People hop onto a plane for the weekend. So it's so easy, Bizman Azeh, for a person to get those dollars. So envision even the person who's sitting in Eretz Yisrael and he doesn't have a dollar on it. Yeah, but he can't get out. But the problem is he can't get out dollars out of that.
No.
Right? You can only get shkolim out of that. So. The guy basically has his dollars in his hand. It's 6,000 miles away. He has to go come back to Bergenfield and go to the ATM in Bergenfield. All right, what's a flight between friends? That's also considered to be almost biyado. So therefore, even though it's probably right, it's possibly right that the dollars in Eretz Yisrael are not really the currency anymore, even if we want to be machmir that shaila, it could be that the Yeshlo may exist Bizman Azeh. So again, those are the different stuff in Makalakan, the postkims. I think people are pretty makel about this. I think that most people, for a variety of these reasons, are pretty makel to assume that there's no sub-to-sub problem in it. So, but it's not so poshut. Not so poshut that that's really the case. Yeah.
What would happen if you hit the jackpot and you have no access to dollars at all whatsoever, but you're a tourist and you meet up with another tourist from America, so your main currency and his main currency are both dollars, even though in Eretz Yisrael...
You don't have any of those dollars. If you don't have any dollars, though.
Right, but I want to borrow dollars from him.
That's the problem. That's exactly the problem.
No,
is that a violation?
The main currency that we both use are dollars in America. So
yeah, but we're both in Eretz Yisrael now. Right? If we're both in Eretz
Yisrael...
Yeah, it goes where we are now. Yeah. Yeah, it goes where we are now, right? In fact, I have an American passport. That's not going to help me. If I'm sitting in the plaza right now and he's in the inval, that's a problem. Okay, I mean, it's not a problem. It's a problem in terms of self-to-self. Okay. So we now move on to another application of Ribbis D'Rabbanan, and that's something we've been alluding to a little bit. Until this point, we haven't really begun to discuss it, and that's as follows. Sometimes you can have a situation of Ribbis that arises where there's really no loan. It doesn't look like it's a loan b'chlal. It's a really derech mechira. What's really taking place is a business transaction. I'm buying something, and somehow the way the transaction is being formulated, it ends up to be a problem, a potential problem of ribbis. So this is what's called ribbis derech mekach memker, which is always going to be a ribbis derabanan. You can sometimes, a strange scenario, have a shayla of ribbis derais and mekach memker, but for 99% of what we're going to talk about now are problems of ribbis derabanan. And again, the same reason that they resemble ribbis, and as we've seen before, the chazal was so machmir nuchas ribbis, we treat ribbis the same way in Nuchas Shabbos we make Yisurim Derabbanan, Yisurim Derabbanan, Yisurim Derabbanan, Nuchas Nida we make Derabbanans and Derabbanans, and Siyagam to protect one from violating Nisa Deraisa of these other Yisurim. The same is true when it comes to Ribbis, that it's Mamash, it's Nisa no less than any other Yisurim in the Torah, and therefore Chazal made many Yisurim Derabbanans, anything that looks, that smells a little bit like Ribbis. And this is the whole area of Halacha that's called Ribbis Derech HaMekachol Memka. You can have a situation where most people look at this and say, there's no Ribbis because there's no loan, but if you look at it a little bit closer, you notice that there is a quote-unquote loan that's taking place, and that would be a problem. So the first example of this is what the Mishnah talks about in Ezeh Unesh, the fifth parak of Metzia, where the Mishnah speaks about buying things on credit. So the Mishnah speaks about if if I want to make the following deal with you, I say, listen, I'd like to come and buy X amount of potatoes, and I'll pay you $100 for those potatoes now. So the guy says, listen, you know what? I'll let you hold on to the money. You don't have to pay me right now. You can pay me in a month from now, but if you pay me in a month from now, you got to pay me $120 for the potatoes. So I give you to present two different prices are presented for that same amount of stuff. So why am I getting the later price? Why are you giving me the higher price? So the answer is very simple. When I buy the potatoes from you, so the halacha requires me to pay you right away. When you buy a mekach, you buy something, so you become mechuyev, meshubet to pay. The second that you pick up the object, you now become mechuyev to pay. Elowat, the guy's being nice to me, and he's holding off, and he's saying, hey, listen, you don't have to pay right now. You could hold off, and you'll pay me in a week from now, pay in a month from now, pay me in a year from now. So he's, in effect, lending me the money. Now again, Minat Torah is not lending me the money. Minat Torah, no money has changed ownership, but Midirabonim, this looks like a loan. He's extending the credit to me, so I would otherwise have had to pay him back now, and now he's asking me to pay him back in a month from now, but in exchange for that, letting me hold on to the money for another month, he's hiking up the price a little bit. So that's a problem of Ribbis. That's an Issa Dirabanan of Ribbis.
I would say, like, if a guy, in other words, sometimes a guy comes in, he'll pay you right away, so he'll charge him a price, but if he's going to have it on his books for a month, he's entitled to some profit.
Oh, okay. Oh, wait. Profit's
not Ribbis.
You said the wrong word. Profit is Ribbis. Profit is Ribbis. You're not allowed to make profit off of having holding on to somebody's money. That is, we're going to talk about this case. One second. Let me try to present it first. So again, so this is the issa that appears in the Mishnah. This is Beferish. This is an issa derabanan of charging more in terms of credit. These shalas happen all the time. You have these kinds of shalas. Just mamish, in the last 2 days ago, somebody asked me the following shalas. A guy was buying a car. A guy is buying a used car from another firm person, and the guy said to him, "Listen, I'll quote you two prices. If you pay me right now, I'll charge you $5,000. If you pay me in 2 months from now, so I'm going to charge you $6,000. So the guy came in and he asked me, "Are you allowed to do that?" I said, "Absolutely not." I said, "That's mamish ribbis. That's the case." So are there any exceptions to this rule? Are there any ways to word these kinds of transactions that they don't run into a problem of ribbis? So the Rishonim explained, based on the Gemara's, it's a sugya that's a little bit unclear whether it's talking about this, but we assume the following halacha. There's a difference. Let's say you have an object that doesn't really have a set price. That there is no shah kavua b'shuch as to what a price, what the object cost. So then, who determines the price? So the mocha sets the price. So I come to you and I say as follows. I say, listen, I'm going to sell you my used car. There's no price what the used car is. You know, not every used car, as we all know, used car can go for a lot. If the blue book, they used to call the prices, whatever it is. So within a certain amount, it's considered to be a normal price, but there is no absolute set price. So I say to you the following. I say, listen, I'm going to sell you the car, and pay me in 30 days from now $6,000. That's what I say to you. So the Rishonim write, that's okay. Because if the object, everybody knows that this car goes for $5,000, and I come to you and I say, pay me in a month from now and give me $6,000, so that's a problem, because there's a set price, and now I'm charging the extra $1,000 for the schar and tanas malos, for the holding on, for the ability for you to hold on the money. That looks like ribbis. But if there's no set price, so who put $5,000 as the starting price? The price is $6,000. So I'm selling you a car for $6,000, and I'm giving you a break. I'm letting you pay me in a month from now. So that's not considered to be ribbis. However, the poskim write, b'med devam amurim, that I don't present to you the two options. It means if there's no set price, and I only quote you one price, but within quoting you that price, I say to you, okay, you have a month to pay me, so that's okay, that's the price that I set, $6,000. But if I come to you and I say, listen, there's no set price in this car, I'm the bala boss, I'm deciding how much the car costs, so I'm telling you as follows, here are your two choices. Pay me today, it's $5,000, pay me in a month from now, it's $6,000. So that's a joke. Of course that's a problem. That's not included in the hefter. The hefter is only true when it's not nikur that it's being done with Torah's ribbis, but it's being done with Torah's ribbis. There are two prices that are being quoted, so that's problematic. So this is a classic, let me just finish the example. This is a classic example. When you go to gas stations, you run into this problem all the time. You go to a gas station, so they put up two prices on the board. So the price is, if you pay for cash, it's $1.69. If you pay with credit, it's $1.79. So that's a problem. So even though you can argue maybe gas does have a set price, doesn't have a set price, there is a certain degree of fluctuation between different gas stations, but Lamaisa, when the guy presents to you a two-tier system, I'm telling you, cash $1.69, credit $1.79, so that's this case. That's exactly what the Mishnah says you're not allowed to do. So in Echanami, that's Takad Halacha, that you're not allowed to do that. If it's a non-Jewish gas station, you can do whatever you want, but if it's a Jewish gas station, that would be a problem. So far, he's still not Jewish, the guy who owns and bought the Gulf station. So he was in the middle of being Megayer, the guy, I don't know by who, by what, where, but the guy who bought the Gulf station, as of now, as of my sources, I spoke to a Rav who knows him. As of now, he's still not Jewish. If and when he becomes Jewish, we have to talk to him about the two-tier price system. But meanwhile, he's still okay. He's still with us.
But cars do have a known value. You have a blue book.
So if there's a going value, so then it's always a problem. Even if I only quote him one price, if the price is higher than the going value, and I'm charging him the higher price because of the credit that I'm extending him. But if there's no going value for something, and I quote him only the higher price, that's not a problem of ribbis. But if it has no value and I quote him both prices, even that's going to be a problem of ribbis. Service fees. Okay, we're going to talk about the service. Okay, you know, let me just give a few more prompts on this halacha. I have a feeling that all the questions are going to be answered in the next 2 minutes. Let me just see if we just go through quickly.
Can I just answer, what's interesting when you just said and buy something on sale? In other words, if I go to Black Express and I buy it, so today it's $1.79. If I wait a week later, it's going to be $1.89.
You want to sell? You're the bottle boss. I could sell. If I own the soda, I can charge you whatever I want for the soda. But I can't give you two prices.
Why not?
Okay, we're going to get discounts. Let me try to finish a little bit, okay? So are there any ways to, in a sense, get around this problem? Are there any ways that wouldn't resemble a problem of ribbis? Besides what we said before, if I only quote one price and there is no price that's set. So there was some acharonim who came up with the following kula, who said that if you're dealing with something which doesn't really have a set price. So the only thing that makes this look like ribbis is the fact that I'm presenting the two prices. So maybe we could say as follows. Maybe we could turn around what I said. What I said before is I'm selling you the car for $5,000 if you pay me now. That's the real price of the car. Hidden Mukhram Zuman, that's what the work is. This is the price of the car. And if you pay me later, so then we're going to turn the price into $6,000. So that's a problem. What if I just turn it around simpler? It's like this. The real price of this car is $6,000. I could do that. There's no price. I mean, the blue plate, they don't say what the price is. So there's no price for the car. So I'm the baller boss. I'm telling you, listen, straight up, this is the price of the car, $6,000. But I do business in the following way. My way of doing business, I don't like money up front. Right? I'm very, you know, I trust you. You pay me in a month from now, that's perfectly okay. I'm selling you the car for $6,000. For $6,000, payable March 1st. However, if you decide to give me the money today, so then I'll make another price for you, then I'll put it to you on sale. If you decide to give me the money today, then I'll charge you only $5,000. I'm entitled to the $5,000 now, so no one's lending anybody any money. So what we just did is we took what would have been also as ribbis, and we just revamped it. We just turned it around on its head, and we said rather than calling the higher price the ribbis price, we'll call the higher price the real price, and we'll call the cash price the discount price. So is that okay or not? So there was some achrenim who said that's okay. Some achrenim argued that maybe that's all right. Maybe you can kvesh as long as you word it in such a way that it's okay. So many poskim, probably most poskim, did not accept that. This is mamash a game. I mean, it's just a total semantics. So we try to assume that this is not an acceptable way of doing business. And it could be that Bisman Azeh, unless there's just two frum Jews who are going to do it this way, who can word it this way, then you can begin to discuss the kula. But this isn't a business kind of a setting. So go to Gulf Station, as someone would say, owned by a Jew, go to Gulf Station, explain to him what it means when it says cash $1.69 and credit $1.79. What it really means is the real price is $1.79. But you're giving a discount, though, you know, it doesn't work that way. So
yeah, actually, it does.
It does.
MasterCard and Visa require by law, by their
company. Oh my goodness, wait, this may be a good cooler, yeah.
You can actually report gas stations that don't, if they advertise the lower price and then say 10 cent penalty, MasterCard can force them to change it to say to advertise the higher price and advertise it at a discount for paying cash.
There you have it. So now, according to those achronim, would be mutter. But the bad news is that most of the poskim say it's not true. Most of the poskim say the whole kula is not true. But it's interesting to know. I never knew that. Okay, you have to write to Rabbi Reisman in his Hilchos Ribbis book. So he has a footnote on the bottom about gas stations. So he writes that according to these achronim, maybe one can be melamed tzchus on Jewish gas stations. But he says it's very hard to believe. He has lashon. It's very hard to believe that's what the gas stations have in mind. But now you're saying, forget, they have to have that in mind. That's going to be reported. Okay, maybe. But again, the whole kula is a shvakul. The whole thing is a shvakul kula.
It also says cash discount.
Yeah, okay. I don't know, but that's the question. Does it really mean that? Does it really mean that? Does it mean that they're trying? Okay.
What's the objection?
No, is that the whole thing is a chuchot lula? It looks like a big joke. It means it's just covering up what you're really doing. What you're really doing is you're giving the guy trying to milk him for a few more dollars because he's not paying you on time. So he really owes you the money now, and I'm going to hike up the price. I'm going to get another $1,000 out of him for not paying me on time. So that's ribbis.
If there's a set price, then you're allowed to.
If there's a set price, then it's worse.
If there's a set price for $6,000, but if you pay me now, the set price is $6,000.
Right.
If you pay me today, give me $5,000.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that. Okay, that sounds like that should be okay. Okay, assuming that he gets the car delivered today. If he pays me now and he doesn't get the car for another 6 months from now, that's a problem. That's a problem in the other direction, but we didn't get to that yet.
We're going to talk about that. If he doesn't accept the offer, if the buyer says, look, it's $6,000, pay me today, I'll take $5,000. So if the guy peels out the $5,000 and gives it to him, then he got the lower price. There was no interest, or what you call interest, ribbons. But if he doesn't take the deal and it goes to the month later, then this is where the problem kicks in. Am I right?
Well, if Lamaisa was only one price, and I said to him, listen, give me $5,000 and I'll sell you the car now. So even though the going price is $6,000, you can do whatever you want. If I want to set a lower price for myself, that's fine. Well, if I should find such car salesmen to do that.
Business used to be like standard
terms. 210 net 30. Yeah, so we're going to talk about that. Okay, we'll talk about it in a second. So the Poskim discussed the following Shaila, common Shaila. I'm selling goods to somebody, and I want to build a person for the goods, so I make the following deal with them. So I say, if you pay me in the next 10 days, I'm going to send you two bills in effect. I mean, quote unquote. If you pay me in the next 10 days, so I'm going to give you 2% off of what the total should be. If you pay me in 30 days, so then you're going to have to pay me the full amount. Am I correct? That's what the basic standard of billing is. So this is a big shiloh. This is a very, very real shiloh. So there were some poskim who wanted to be melamed chus and people who were involved in these kinds of billings based on the first group of acharon that we said before. The same way that as long as there's no absolute chayk l'yab set price over here, so the balabos is setting his own prices, so rather than viewing it as he's setting... Rather than saying that the 10-day price is the real price and the 30-day price is the higher price, so flip it around. Say that the real price is in 30 days from now. That's the emes price. If you're nice and you give me the money 20 days early, so I'm going to give you a little bit of shave off, a little bit off the deal. So if that would be true, so then you would have those acharonim possibly to rely on. So the poskim also very weary to rely on this because, first of all, we're not sure that those first group of poskim are right. And many, probably most of the poskim didn't like that game of flipping around the numbers because it's all just a chuchot lula, so it's just a game. And number two, it's also unclear, is that really what the person's kavan is? So I have yet to enter into one of these kinds of tests. Is that a person who bills merchandise with that kind of a system? So what is he real? What's the real understanding of what's going on? So the whole thing is a joke. So, but
this thing, you're charging a certain amount. If you're nice, you give them off a little bit. It's not that you're adding.
So that's the question. Is the pshat that you're being nice and you're giving him off a little bit, or you're being mean and you're charging him more? So it's understood. The normal way of buying things in the days of Chazal was that you pay when you buy something. So there's a concept of hakafa that was buying hakafa b'chanus in the days of Chazal also. But that's the question. If I jack up the price for later payment, that is ribbis. That's exactly what the Mishnah says you're not allowed to do. So that's the question. Is this called jacking up the price, or is this called lowering the discount? That's the shaila. So again, most poskim don't like these kinds of things. People who are in, I would say like this, anyone who's in a one-time kind of these things, like they have these games with the guy buying a car or not, if the guy's from, explain to him, listen, we're not doing this, and give me one price, and that's it, and finish. If you're talking about a guy who has an ongoing business type of an issue with this, then I would strongly recommend to make a heteriska for this. So we'll talk about it. There are ways to make a heteriska for this. We haven't even touched heteriska, so it's weeks down the line, but I would say that one should incorporate this into a heteriska rather than relying on any of these coolers. That's the opposite shaila, early bird discounts, because here I'm giving you money that I don't have to give you yet because I'm not getting the object and I'm not getting the services of the object until later. I'm giving you the money, so I'm lending you the money. So I'm lending you the money, now you're giving me a discount. That's a problem of ribbis in the other direction. In Rochinami, that is sometimes a problem of ribbis. We'll talk about that hopefully next week or the following week. We still didn't finish about the buying on credit. So again, so the basic clause of the buying on credit is that when there's a set price, things are worse because then we know what the price is and you're hiking up the price. So that's a problem. If there's no set price, then you can start to pilpul about is that considered to be permissible or not. Hopefully that's Shemnet. that's we have to talk about other aspects of this, of service charges and late and penalty charges, all those kinds of things. Sometimes the reason why you're charging me more money for later is not so much because you want to make the extra 29 cents out of me, it's because it costs you a couple extra minutes of paperwork. So do you have a right to charge me for that? So we'll talk about that, hopefully, next week.